This is St. Louis on the Air. I'm Steve Potter in for Don Marsh today. On Sunday afternoon at the John Burroughs School, the University City Symphony Orchestra presents a program titled The Seeds Continue to Flower. At the podium will be the symphony's conductor, Leon Burke III. Mr. Burke, welcome to the program.
Why, thank you, Steve.
This concert is part of the symphony's Black Art Matters season.
Yes.
And could you share a little bit about that?
Well, growing up in St. Louis as a young African-American guy, I was just really struck, of course, with all of the events in Ferguson. And I was just wanting to do a retrospective of how I came to be me and explore some of the pieces that had really influenced me. So I started with music of the man called the Black Mozart, Chevalier de Saint-Georges. And we had a program based around that. And, of course, you've interviewed Fred O. many times.
Oh, yes.
We did one of his pieces. And in our second concert, probably the dean of American, African-American composers, William Grant Still, we did his Afro-American Symphony. And we also compared the influence of the African slave trade in Argentina in a concerto that examines that in the genre of tango. And so now this concert, we're exploring more jazz.
Good. So the seeds continue to flower. What does that mean to you?
Well, it's in this country that's such a great melting pot. Obviously, the influence that most people will recognize are the spirituals and other music from Africa, and they don't really realize that there is a symphonic tradition here too. And I wanted to highlight that. And Alex Ross, in his wonderful book, The Rest is Noise, you know Alex Ross, he's the music critic for The New Yorker, has said in his book that European music at the turn of the 20th century was thinking that the way music was going, we were going to turn to the music of the African-American experience and tap into that. And, of course, Dvorak is chief among them. And he also cites, because of the various societal things, that really the flowering of the genius of the African-American musician was in jazz. And we see that reflected in music now. So this is a concert of kind of symphonic jazz-influenced pieces.
Okay, I want to talk more about the program later, but I want to talk a little bit about your story too. And you made me think when you're talking about being a little black kid growing up here in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And look what you're doing now with symphony, and you juggle all kinds of hats, which I want to get into. But you mentioned jazz. So when you were growing up as the little black kid, did you feel that you had options to explore other kinds of music? You know, maybe, you know, black people were good at jazz. Did eyebrows go up when maybe you were interested in symphonic music?
Well, you might say that. I remember when I was enamored of the music of Shostakovich and Hindemith and Stravinsky and Bach and Beethoven, I would go out and buy these records. And my father, who was an avid jazz fan, I mean, we only had jazz records in the house, was kind of amazed when he said I was looking at all this music. Why are you interested in this? I raised you on the classics, Count Basie and Duke Ellington. But, you know, I think good music is good music. And my interests led me to this classical music and through the encouragement of course, the late Dr. William Schatzkammer and Norman Goldberg. These are some people who really encouraged me and taught me. And so they were very encouraging, and so I felt that there was nothing in my way. Plus, my aunt was the first black woman to receive a doctorate from the St. Louis University. Hmm. And she introduced me at a young age to Dr. King. So I was raised to be colorblind, and as long as you worked hard, there was nothing you could not achieve. And so that's just been my upbringing.
Well, you got started in music at a very young age.
Well, not very young. Most of the people...
I thought it was three.
Oh, well, at three, people said I started... I would watch TV and I'd wave my arms along with the conductor. But really, I started my musical studies at age 12. I was quite a late starter, late bloomer. Because most people who are having a career in music start at six or earlier.
Mm-hmm. There was a gentleman that you succeeded at the University City Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
I know had a big role to play in your life.
Oh, yes, that was Dr. Schatzkamer. He taught me in I was going to summer school. It was an enrichment program in the Clayton School District, Mark Twain Summer Institute. And he had this course called The Making of a Musician. And part of it, we all played our instruments. We all had to play chamber music. And he taught everyone to conduct. He said, at some point, you'll have to lead the Star Spangled Banner. It's not easy to conduct. Let me show you. And so he gave me my first conducting lessons. And when I got up to conduct the Star Spangled Banner in front of the group, he said the things you should never tell to an eager adolescent. You know, you have a flair for that. So I immediately went to Washington University Music Library and checked out every book on conducting and read them all from cover to cover.
You know, a lot of people don't have mentors. How important was that to you at a young age to have people in the business you were interested in give you encouragement?
Well, I think it was big. The way I was raised, I could excel at anything I put my mind to.
You were taught that you could.
I was taught that I could, and I had quite a bit of talent in science and mathematics. I was starting my high school chemistry when I was in third grade, and I was reviewing calculus when I was a freshman. But, you know, the teachers were saying, well, you're black. You can't do that.
No, so honestly, they told you that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And so it was one of those things that, you know, in my academic pursuits, I had been kind of frustrated, but music always had my heart. Mm-hmm. And so I just poured my energies into music.
But you always had other interests too, didn't you?
Oh, always, always. I still love science. I still keep up with science. I love Ira Flatow's show. And it's one of those things. I think that the way the math and the music set up is because music and mathematics or in physics, it's advanced pattern recognition. And a musician can quickly see a pattern in things and use them as well a mathematician would.
Well, I just have to ask you this because you said your interest in science, and I understand that you're very involved, or very interested at least, in the issue of asbestos and asbestos removal. And that just sort of that surprised me.
Well, I have to tell you, one of the practicalities about being a musician, I had built a life in Kansas, and I married, and when I had two young children, I was offered the possibility of having one of the Fulbright fellowships to this country of Paraguay. And so I took it, and so I went down there. I was the resident conductor of the orchestra and did some teaching and some other stuff. I came back to the United States. The people that I had worked with in Kansas had already moved on. They couldn't do without me for a whole year. And so it ended up, I came back here to St. Louis, and I'm looking for a job. I have a young family to support. And one of my roommates, my ex-roommates, was an environmental consultant. And he said, I'm looking to hire someone. I said, well, how much does it pay? And the amount got my attention. And I said, why are you going to strangers? And I started off in that business as an environmental consultant. And I got my certifications. And I've been working in that ever since. And that has been kind of a mainstay. Right now, I've been laid off from the company I've been with for the last 15 years or so due to the downturn in the economy. And so luckily, I have a spot with the dominant training center for environmental issues here. And so now I've become a teacher. And I come from a family of teachers. This is a natural fit.
But do you actually remove asbestos?
I'm the guy outside who is taking the samples to make sure none of it gets out and observing the work to make sure that they're doing it right. That's, so, no, I go in only when I have to.
I see. That's serious work, certainly. But, you know, speaking of that, one thing I do want to get into is how hard it is to make a living as a musician here or anywhere, I guess. You work with asbestos, for one thing. But even musically, you have, you know, you're involved with the St. Louis Symphony Chorus, with choirs. I know you sing. So anyway, the point I'm trying to get at, what are all the things that you have to do? You're sort of like a struggling actor, right?
Oh, yes.
You do a million things.
I think that's fair.
Tell us about wearing all these hats and what you have to do to make a living, what you've had to do.
Well, I have to choose the things I volunteer for very carefully. And I've put together, there's a book out there about having a life in music and talks about the individual skills you have as Legos. And as Legos can be put together to assume so many different types of shapes. you know, so is the musician. We have all kinds of skills. Actually, when I went to conservatory, I started out in radio. And so I have some announcing skills. And when I first moved back here, I was actually a substitute announcer right here on KWMU.
I heard that.
Yes,
I want to ask you one thing, too, because, you know, as a musician, when I got into radio, there are a lot of people, kind of rolled their eyes, including my parents.
Oh, I know that.
And don't you have a similar story? Didn't people say, well, maybe you need a real job?
Oh, my father was – my bachelor's degree is in composition, so as a young composer. And so he said, why don't you study some music education so when you graduate you can get a job? So, yes, there is pressure. But the performing of music really captured my heart.
All right. Tell me right now, what are you doing right – what are all your musical jobs and things you're into in a typical year?
All right. In a typical year. All right. In general, every Monday belongs to the Belleville Philharmonic Youth Orchestra. In general, Tuesday nights belongs to the St. Louis Symphony Chorus, where I got some Amy Kaiser's assistant, and so I have to really be prepared to go to work there. Wednesday night is the University City Symphony. Thursday and Friday nights are my floaters, but of course in the symphony week, those are performances and dress rehearsals. Saturday used to be another dress rehearsal. I'm the choir director at Elliott Unitarian Chapel in Kirkwood. And during the year, I may have what we call gigs, short-term, and I think in the business we call them projects. So I will have a project. I'll be the bass soloist for Messiah in Harvard, Massachusetts. I will conduct the Orchestra for Ballet Kansas, like say with a Nutcracker or another ballet. I may go back to Paraguay for some guest conducting or for some teaching. I kind of go back there quite a bit because I've been involved with them for so long. There's a whole generation of young musicians who I've kind of nurtured.
Uh-huh. When you were reeling off all the days of the week here, I didn't hear you leave one open like I didn't hear a date night or...
No, but I try to on Fridays because I live in a household where I only have girls. And so I need to have a night out with the guys.
How many girls have you got?
I have three girls in total, and my two grandchildren are both girls, too.
Wow.
So I live in an estrogen zone. And so I prefer to try to find some time during the week to hang out with some male friends. And we try to do that, schedule that for a Friday, or Friday doesn't work, maybe for a Sunday afternoon happy hour.
So you go from asbestos removal to estrogen removal.
I try to. You know, sometimes you have to indulge the testosterone.
Of all those musical jobs that you just listed, are they all paid positions or some
yes.
of those freebies?
No. They're all paying gigs, as I say.
Wow.
I have to because I'm my wife doesn't work. So as a single wage earner family, it's incumbent on me to really, you know, take care of the family. And I have to do paying gigs.
Oh, tell me the truth then. You know, when most people might hear that, look at your resume and see that you're doing or just hear the list that you just gave, they might think, oh, poor Leon, he's got so much to do, all these sticks in the fire. But I was just thinking that maybe a creative person likes it that way.
Well, there's something you said if you're going to be like that, you have to enjoy it or you have to be able to deal with it very, very well or else it'll make you crazy. And there are extra things. As a matter of fact, for the National Society of Arts and Letters, I'm going to be on a panel for emerging artists in music theater, as a matter of fact, with Terry Schnook and Zoe van der Haar.
Oh.
So, I mean, these kinds of things I cannot turn down. And so you just kind of – it's a scheduling nightmare. That's what it is. It's just you have to make sure you have the date. So my calendar is right here in my hand. I keep it at arm's length.
I want to remind people that you will be conducting the University City Symphony Orchestra in The Seed. The Seeds Continue to Flower. That's going to be this Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. at John Burroughs School on Price Road. If you'd like more information, go to our website, stlpublicradio.org/STL on air.
Oh, and Steve, I have just a second, I want to say we have some guest artists who are going to be joining
us. I wanted
you
to talk about the program. Yeah.
Oh, great. Because we have Michael Castro, the poet laureate of St. Louis, who's going to drop in and deliver some of his poems that are jazz influenced. And Pat Thurman from the 10th Street Gallery is putting up a little display because I realized when I announced it, black art matters. So, should have said Black Music Matters. Well, now I have to service all the other arts. Mm-hmm. So we've had dance, and so now we have poetry, and now we also have the visual arts. So I'm really thrilled with how our season's shaped up.
So it's 3 p.m. Sunday at John Burroughs School. It starts at 3. As I said, there's going to be a pre-talk, I guess, you're involved with, at 2:15.
I'm going to do the talk.
And when I was listening to everything that you do, I'm just going to give you a test here. You know, you had all your days. Okay, week from Tuesday, what are you doing?
A week from Tuesday, Symphony Chorus. As a matter of fact, it will be the Berlioz Romeo and Juliet.
Anything new for you in the new year?
Well, I'm looking into some things, so I'm going to keep them under wraps as for right now. But I will be the music coordinator for the Unitarian Universalist General Assemblies.
Well, Leon Burke conducts the University City Symphony Orchestra. Thank you so much. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you, Steve. Good here.
Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. I'm Steve Potter, and St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.